This is CICK News. Chief Sahail, or Adam Gagnon, was in provincial court yesterday in Smithers for performing work with an excavator without the proper permits at Toboggan Creek. However, he argues that it wasn't his responsibility to get those permits. Chief Sahail said those owners should have gone through the appropriate channels, namely the Department of Fisheries and Oceans and BC Provincial Ministries, to obtain environmental or development permits. Chief Sahail's excavator has been impounded by the DFO for over 2 years, and his goal now is to defend himself in court and get their equipment back. But how does this case fit into the bigger picture for Chief Sahail? Last year to the day, he was sentenced to 60 days house arrest for causing a significant degree of disruption for CGL workers and the pipeline construction on Wet'suwet'en territory, according to BC Supreme Court Justice Michael Tamman. Listen to my interview with Chief Sahail, or Adam Gagnon, outside the courthouse in Smithers yesterday.
My name is Chief Sahail, and I'm from the Sun House of the Laksamisu clan, and my English name is Adam Gagnon, and I'm from Wet'suwet'en, and I do a lot of work on our territory.
So, actually, I wanted to start off with a question that's not necessarily about today, but Amnesty International has labeled you as the first Wet'suwet'en prisoner of conscience in regards to your recent house arrest.
Yeah, it was last year when I ended up getting house arrest, 60 days house arrest. And what that entailed basically was me being in my house there. And what it was there is I was defending our land. And the Canadian court will not, they don't recognize Wet'suwet'en law, even though our laws have been around for thousands of years. The Euro-Canadians do not recognize that there's, what happens is that one of the things that Judge Tamman said is that Wet'suwet'en law cannot coexist with colonial law, you know, it just, which is completely bogus. We've been coexisting there for hundreds of years there for to make a bold statement like that. I don't feel too, it makes you lose faith there in the judicial system of the colonial governments.
A prisoner of conscience is any person imprisoned or otherwise physically restricted, such as through house arrest, solely because of their political, religious, or other conscientiously held beliefs, and who has not used violence or advocated violence or hatred in the circumstances leading to their detention. The Wet'suwet'en Land Defenders, like each year, Amnesty International chooses a group to focus on, and that being the focus last year, did that actually do anything for Wet'suwet'en Land Defenders that are still working and you're finding yourself back in court again? Did that make any impact?
It makes a huge impact there. What Amnesty International has done for the Wet'suwet'en has just been incredible, because what they did, you're familiar with the film there, the documentary,
yeah.
Yinta.
Yeah.
They've brought it there. They were encouraging and doing, they have representation in 70 countries around the world. And what they wanted to have it is they wanted to translate it into all of these different languages. There, people around the world could actually see what's happening to the Wet'suwet'en on their own lands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, stuff like that makes a huge difference. And Canada, they've been mistreating their First Nations people there all across Canada there for the last 450 years. And me being given the title of the first prisoner of conscience there, it was the first time there that they've been actually called out on all their dastardly movements there that they used against First Nations for the last 150 years. So it's important that people like Amnesty exist, because they're able to see things from a very non-biased position and are able to weigh out all of the pros and cons there of what is actually happening within the legal and justice system.
Bring me up to today. We're back in provincial court today. So can you tell me a little bit about the proceedings and how you're feeling about this so far?
What it is I'm not really pleased there with what happened there, because I was working for a client who has massive amounts of his property. It's about an 80-foot embankment that's being undermined by Toboggan Creek during the high water in the spring. And the whole thing is ready to slide down into Toboggan Creek. And I was hired to shore up the bank in order to keep that slide from coming down into the creek. And the guy that hired me is a civil engineer, and this is the type of stuff that he does in Switzerland. Even though I asked him to do his due diligence there, he just wanted to go ahead and do the job, and I was the one that got persecuted for and got my excavator seized. And
why are you liable?
Well, that's the problem. I ask that same question. I got my equipment seized here, and I'm basically just a hired help.
Yeah.
And yet, what ended up happening was when the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, when they did the stop work order, I tried to talk to the owners into doing an appeal. I said, get a lawyer and let's appeal it so that we could do a proper reclamation plan there before the judge there and bring it before a judge and get authorized there so we can continue the work.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to. They wanted to just work with DFO from then on. And one of the problems that we're faced with is my lawyer said, oh, they threw you under the bus.
How do you feel that this fits into the grand scheme of what so many Wet'suwet'en land defenders have been working on to protect the Yinta? Does this fit in any sort of way?
No, this is exactly what we are working with at land defending, because it's my responsibility as a hereditary chief there, and Toboggan Creek being on Lac-Samisu territory, that it's important there that we protect the fish as much as we can. And that is a really rich fish spawning stream. And what happened is having landslides going into the creek is not going to be beneficial for the fish, and it's not good for the people that own the land. DFO, they're not really concerned about the fish. They're just concerned about being boss. So the fish kind of follow. They use it as an excuse. Sure. So that's the long and short of that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Masai, for speaking with me.
Yeah. Thank you.
The Telkwa Coal Project is still active and currently under review by BC's Environmental Assessment Office, or EAO, despite years of delays caused by company mismanagement, ownership changes, and additional information requests. The new owner, Bathurst Resources Limited, is expected to submit the required information by fall 2025. Once the EAO deems the submission complete, a 150-day decision period will begin, including a final public comment window. What Matters in Our Valley has been appointed the Community Advisory Committee and will facilitate public forums and share expert insights. Approval of the project could lead to mine expansion and extraction of coal bed methane, raising serious concerns about impacts on the environment, public health, and quality of life in the Valley. That's today on CICK News.
My name's Jay Gilden, and I live in the rural area outside Smithers.
Okay, we're speaking about what matters in our Valley, and we're talking specifically about kind of advancements with the Telkwa coal mine project.
Right.
So would you be willing to start off by telling me who is Bathurst?
Well, Bathurst is a New Zealand mining company. It specializes in coal. It's a relatively large company. It's the largest mining company in New Zealand. And they took over from the company that originally started this project, which was known as Allegiance, when Allegiance's U.S. affiliate went bankrupt. And Bathurst bought the project from Allegiance for, well, a very little amount of upfront money.
And now, What Matters in Our Valley has been brought on this project as a community advisory committee. Can you tell me what that means and what your group will do with this role?
We started back in 2017 when Allegiance first announced that it was interested in trying to develop a coal mine here. And we had had a lot of communications with the Environmental Assessment Office about what we thought was not a very good or procedure in terms of getting public input into the environmental assessment. So eventually, from the beginning of this year, the Environmental Assessment Office invited us to be what was known as the Community Advisory Committee, which is intended to discuss with them the issues that the community thinks is important in terms of the risks posed by the project. And so we kind of exchange information with the Environmental Assessment Office as the process goes on. The process will probably reach its culmination late this fall, after the Environmental Assessment Office collects additional information that was first requested about 2 years ago, or maybe 2.5 years ago now. And then we'll have to make an assessment. And at that time, there'll be a final public comment procedure, and we will comment to them and communicate with the public about what we think the issues are.
Yeah. Now, what decision makers are you in contact with?
Well, so the process is there's the Environmental Assessment Office, which works within what used to be called the Ministry of the Environment. And they have to review the information provided by the proponent and the community's responses and decide whether to recommend to the ministers whether or not this project should be approved. The ministers, that being the Ministry of Mine or the Minister of Mines and Minister of Land and Water Resources at this point, which is, used to be the Ministry of the Environment, are the ones who make the final decision. Right now, we're in touch with the people in the Environmental Assessment Office.
Okay. Where are you at now in the process and what the rest of this year is going to look like for What Matters in Our Valley?
Okay, so as I said, there was, I guess it was a year and a half ago, maybe a little more, a series of new questions were issued by the Environmental Assessment Office because they didn't think the first rounds of question and answers provided all the information that was needed. And then the whole process was delayed because of this bankruptcy, and Bathurst took over. And now Bathurst is supposed to be issuing responses to the new information requests.
Okay.
Only one of which have actually received a response at this point that we know about. As those responses come in, the Environmental Assessment Office will send them to us, and then we get to respond as to whether or not, you know, it answers our questions or answers community concerns.
Mm-hmm.
The only one we've got so far is air and noise. And as far as we can see, that doesn't tell us anything more than we already knew. After that, there'll be answers on things like water quality and other environmental risks. And they also have to respond more thoroughly to First Nations concerns.
Okay.
As those responses come in, we're supposed to get them and respond. Now, what we're worried about is that all the responses will come in at the end of the period, which is now predicted to be in this fall, and if it all comes in at once, it's going to be very difficult for us to manage and to respond because, you know, we're just this tiny little organization without a lot of resources, and some of it requires review by expert witnesses. So we're getting a little worried because at this point, the process of response was supposed to start back in February, and here we are in July, and only one round of questions has gotten any response.
Jay, does Bathurst have any sort of a presence in Telqua yet?
Do they have, yes, they still have that office, and they've been doing some work. We know they did some seismic testing earlier in the year.
Okay. Last question, Jay, is, so if people want to learn more about this project and maybe they even feel over their heads, or maybe they are, an expert in the field that they could understand kind of this project and how it's going to affect the Valley, where's the best place for them to find information to read up on and to get acquainted with what's happening in the Valley?
Well, you know, we provided a very detailed comment when the mine plan was first filed in 2022, and it's on our website, which is What Matters in Our Valley. If you just Google What Matters in Our Valley, you'll find our website. And then if you look in, on the website at what's known as the resource page and scroll down, the third item is What Matters in Our Valley, comment on EA application. And just open that and read that. And, you know, we summarized all the issues we thought were important at the time. Pretty much all that still applies as far as we know. So it's whatmattersinourvalley.com.
Okay. Is there anything else I didn't ask that you want to include on this in this conversation?
Well, we know Bathurst has had some trouble in New Zealand about its environmental record. They had something called the Canterbury Mine, and the local commission denied their application to expand their mine because they had expanded their operations well beyond what was allowed under what's known as the consent agreements there. And this because of the expansion, there was much more mining going on and it was much greater impacts. And then there were a number of fines for polluting the river and endangering a protected fish there. And so their history is not great. And the local plan, the local commission denied them the application to expand. And those very same kinds of issues will apply here.
Yeah.
We have a substantial, even by what Telka Coal provided at the first round of this process, we know there'll be heavy metal pollution in the river. We know that there'll be selenium pollution, which is what's caused Teck Resources down in the Elk Valley to spend $1.2 billion trying to fix.
Wow.
Success. And it's toxic to fish. We know that these toxins are going to be released into the river. And so it's a very concerning project.
Jay, thank you so much for making time to speak with me about this today.
Okay, thanks, Pamela.
CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.